You have downloaded the ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast.
What to watch for.
He can attack the goal from all different angles, whether it's an alley dodge righty, a split to his left. He can invert. He can pass. They protect the paint. They pack it in as good as anyone in the nation. He fills the goal up. Ground balls will determine possessions and ultimately the winner of this game.
Sounds very simple, and it is.
The ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast. I'm Quint Gesnick. Great to have you with us this week. I'll be heading up to Chester, Pennsylvania, PPL Park for the triple header at St. John's and Syracuse, Penn Villanova, and Penn State Lehigh as part of the Whitman Sampler Independence Classic. That's Saturday, triple header. You can watch those games on ESPN3.com. Friday night, we have a game. UMBC travels to Johns Hopkins to play the Blue Jays at 5 o'clock on ESPNU. Interesting to see what types of changes Johns Hopkins will make following their home loss to Princeton. If I were the Blue Jays, I'd be moving John Rannegan to defensive midfield. Well, everyone talked last weekend about the surprises. Really, at this stage, nothing will surprise me. I want to send a shout-out to Joe Amplo and the folks at Marquette for their first win as a Division I program, taking down an Air Force team who the prior week took down Lehigh. So everybody's in play, everybody's game. One thing that irks me sometimes is when I hear people say statement wins. Ooh, Cornell made a statement win over Colgate. Hopkins lost to Princeton was a statement by the Tigers. You make your statements on Monday through Friday in practice, and the way you approach games, the way you watch films, the way you put in the extra time on the wall, the way you put in the extra time shooting, you make your statements there. The results bear themselves out on Saturday. 5 o'clock on Saturday, it's Penn State and Lehigh. It's game three of the Whitman Sampler Independence Classic. You can watch it on ESPN3 Live or Comcast Sportsnet. We welcome in Lehigh Mountain Hawks head coach Kevin Cassis. Midweek game against Penn, coach. When you point to a big game like Penn State, what will you be emphasizing late this week with your team?
Well, we've seen Penn State play live. We've seen them play on film. They're very athletic. They're playing with a renewed focus and energy this year. So for us, it's going to be recovering from the midweek game, getting ourselves healthy, energized, and really focusing in on their fast-paced and up-tempo style of play this year.
Last season, 14 wins, first-round appearance in the NCAA tournament out of the Patriot League. What's been the biggest challenge for getting this rendition of Lehigh to play their best lacrosse?
Well, I think for us, it has been handling success early in the season. This team has, probably had the most success out of anybody that's ever come through the Lehigh lacrosse program. So initially it was that. I think we did a good job of getting rid of that and getting these guys focused in the early season. Had a nice early season win against Villanova. You know, I think it's going to be a top 20 team at the end of the day. Took some lumps out in Colorado. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing for us. Obviously, it looks bad, but I think a little adversity early in the season can certainly capture the attention of the team, and hopefully now we learn from it and we can move forward.
It was a similar situation last year when you lost to Villanova, and that kind of got the attention of your team. You guys went on a terrific win streak after that loss. What's been the point of emphasis from your kids since the trip to Denver?
Well, a lot of it's been focus. We saw adversity in a lot of different forms out in Colorado, from, weather to changing of game times, game locations, injuries. I mean, we saw a lot of different adversity when we were out there. So the message has been, listen, we're going to see adversity. It's not, the adversity that's going to define you. It's how you respond to it. And, we have some good examples, especially last year, getting whacked by Villanova early in the season and then coming back and winning 9 straight. Is that going to happen this year? That's yet to be determined, but I think we can certainly learn from last year and try and put it to good use for this year and get better moving here forward.
Right now, what is the strength of your team?
The strength of our team, no doubt, is the attack. Our attack is playing lights out, and that's something that was a known commodity coming into the season. I think one of the unknowns that has stepped up is Dan Taylor. He's a sophomore lefty Canadian attackman for us, and he's been a really nice complement to the known, which is David DiMaria and Dante Fantoni. So our attack has been excellent, and hopefully we expect that to keep going, and we need some others to step up along the way to help those guys.
If there's one area that you guys need to improve to win the Patriot League, what would that be?
I think it's going to be in the midfield. I think that's no secret. We're still working and developing You know, looking forward to spring break coming up next week after the Penn State game. Take a page out of John Donowski's book. We might do a midfield camp next week. And, you know, I think our guys are trying real hard. I think we have good talent. I think we have good good people. It's just a matter of finding the right combinations and having some guys take the next step. And I think we can do that.
What should fans expect to see between the pipes this weekend?
Good question. You know, we're still evaluating that. You know, our All-American goaltender has missed two games straight for us. You know, he's a day-to-day. Can't comment on the actual injury that he has. It's university policy, but you know, he's going to be day-to-day. We're hoping he can go. If he can't go, then we're going to see our senior netminder Griffin Farha. He's come in and played well for us, but we're a day-to-day when it comes to the goaltending.
The opportunity to play in this event, Kevin, you know, nice facility. PPL Park is just gorgeous. You got some other quality teams there, Syracuse, Penn, Nova, obviously Penn State, Lehigh, and St. John's. What's the opportunity represent for the program?
Yeah, this is huge for us. We have one-third of our roster hails from the greater Philadelphia area, and you know, that's a huge deal for us. I mean, it's a big recruiting area for us and a nice draw for us. So, you know, kind of a home game for many of the players in our program. Obviously, playing against Penn State, you know, it's an interstate rivalry. It's been really hotly contested the last 2 years. You know, overtime 2 years ago, we lost to them at our place. We go to Happy Valley last year, and we beat them on their turf. So, you know, kind of the rubber match of sorts here. So, I expect it to be a tight game. I expect it to be a hotly contested game and a lot of fun for all the fans that are going to watch.
As you swing things forward later in the season to the Patriot League and trying to get that automatic qualifier, what stands out right now about the league as a whole?
Well, I don't think we're sneaking up on anybody anymore. I think that's probably the number one thing. You know, I think the league is still strong. I think you're gonna see improvement as we move forward. But you know, right now we're getting everybody's best shot. And you know, that shows up here in the early season. I think, you know, you look at us, you know, we drop a couple out in Denver. You know, Colgate gets whacked by Cornell. A couple other teams are dropping some early season games. But, you know, hopefully, you know, the league can kind of get back on its collective feet here and we can, you know, win some big non-conference games moving forward. But I still think the league's going to be strong. It's just a matter of, you know, learning what it's like having a target on the chest.
Important week for Lehigh. They have Penn on Tuesday, Penn State on Saturday, and the Whitman Sampler Independence Classic. That game is 5 o'clock on ESPN3. And then next week, a key week for you guys also at Army and at UMass. We appreciate your time, Kevin. I'm sure there's a lot of work for you to do today and the rest of the week. And thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Clint.
ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast continues with our weekly guest, Terry Foy, who behind the scenes does a lot of the technical work to make sure that this podcast gets posted correctly. Hope you enjoy it. Terry, welcome in. First of all, any news items this week that you are following right now?
Thanks a lot for having me, Quinn. I mean, one of the big news items coming out of last weekend, Brandon Mullins, long stick midi close defenseman for Syracuse, apparently injured, kind of looked like a significant knee injury in the Orange's overtime win over Virginia. His status hasn't been updated, but I would imagine today being Tuesday, we'll probably get some news out of that. And then outside of that, a few lingering suspensions. Obviously, Josh Hawkins at Loyola remains you know, sat down to start the season so far. His return is still being speculated upon and targeted. And then just kind of moving around the rest of the country, no significant injuries coming out of the weekend that I'm tracking, but a few of the longer-term injuries, guys that are probably starting to look to get back on the field, whether it's somebody like Chase Carrero at Denver, Will Manny at UMass. Those are the types of stories we'll be following all week.
Eight games that we're going to break down. Before we do, though, let's look back just real quick. What was most surprising about last weekend's results?
There were a few kind of lower-tier results, teams that are ranked outside of the top 20, 30 that really took me by surprise. You know, teams breaking into the top 20, like Providence, off to an undefeated start. That was a significant surprise to me. And then a few teams that I think fans expected to see make a jump this year. A team like Bryant, who was 0-4 after losing to Vermont, that was another one that surprised me. And then finally, just want to give a nod of the hat to Marquette. They went out to the Rocky Mountains, beat an Air Force team that I think is going to be a contender at the very least in the ECAC and scored the program's first W. So a lot of news going out there.
Air Force beats Lehigh, and then Marquette beats Air Force. Anything is possible. Let's take a look forward to this weekend. We got eight games we're going to break down. Let's go through these rather quickly. Hofstra and Notre Dame.
No, the Fighting Irish have been the cardiac hits so far this season with two overtime game winners out of Matt Kavanaugh. Meanwhile, Hofstra off to a little bit of a quiet 3-1 start, certainly getting some good offense and also getting some good goalie play. They're above 57%, which is something that Notre Dame can't say right now, kind of surprising at this point in the season.
I'll take the under in that game, historically a very low-scoring contest. Game one of the Whitman Sampler Independence Classic, PPL Park, Chester, PA. Gorgeous facility overlooking a penitentiary and a bridge. Orange taking on St. John's.
I think that the Red Storm is coming in, and they want to attack Syracuse. I think what you were able to see out of comparing Syracuse's Army game with their Albany game is that if you go at the Orange, you have a higher likelihood of being successful. Talking with Jason Miller early this week, he made mention of how many players Syracuse plays over the course of a game. So when it comes to depth and when it comes to fitness, the edge might go to the Orange. But I expect this to be a game where St. John's wants to go toe-to-toe with Syracuse. And last year they pulled off some big, big East upsets.
2 weeks ago I was on St. John's campus covering a basketball game. Jason Miller walked into the gym as I was talking to Steve Lavin, and we had a nice chat. Jason Miller's doing a wonderful job at St. John's, and Kieran McCardle, Brian McGill matchup bears watching. UMass, off a loss last weekend, plays Bucknell this weekend.
Absolutely. The Bison, you know, kind of rounding into form a little bit with a big win over Navy, limiting the midshipmen to two goals. I think Coach Fedoraka has to like what he's seen out of his team after, you know, a couple of head-scratcher early season results, particularly the loss to Mount St. Mary. But I think that UMass, you know, they're a team that's been dinged up and kind of trying to find the right form. This is probably a little bit more of a traditional UMass team than their undefeated regular season squad last year, where they're a little bit younger, so they're going to be a little bit more inconsistent, but they're always going to fight, and they're going to have a chip on their shoulder. It's an interesting matchup in terms of profile.
Denver at Ohio State. Pioneers, nice win last weekend against Penn. Ohio State beats Penn State, coming behind from an 8-2 deficit.
Absolutely. That was a game of two halves. The way Penn State was able to jump out on an Ohio State team that was playing a little bit without enthusiasm, and then afterwards, after halftime, the Buckeyes come out and storm back, and then, you know, overtime game-winning goal with 0.6 seconds left on the clock. Just kind of an incredible turn of events for the Buckeyes. But Greg Dutton playing really well in goal. It's the type of thing that you need to slow down a really game Denver offense. And, you know, I think that this is an edge that the Pioneers have, but it'll be an interesting matchup nonetheless.
Battle of the Pennells. It's Cornell and Virginia.
And I think this is a type of game that could potentially determine the top of the rankings for a long time going forward. Obviously, Virginia looking for a bounce-back win, but you mentioned in your column this week, and I thought it was a really apt point, Virginia uses their Syracuse game, win or lose, to build off of, and this will be the first opportunity to see the yield those results. And I think that Cornell, on the flip side, you know, they've got to like where they're at, obviously, but it's a matter of measuring success, not letting yourself get too far ahead by virtue of a big dominant win over a top 20 program like they were able to get out of a 19-3 victory over Colgate.
Princeton, North Carolina. Tigers were terrific in their win at Johns Hopkins. North Carolina has two losses already, albeit to some quality teams. This is a game I have strong feelings about.
Well, I'd like to hear what they are. My only real strong feeling is that I think North Carolina has solidified their goalie position a little bit with Kieran Burke, which is something that I think will be very important for them going forward. But I also think that Princeton is going to attack a North Carolina defense that's still kind of up in the air in terms of who they want to start, who they want to play big minutes.
Yeah, I see both teams scoring. You think about North Carolina's attack, much better suited to attack Princeton's inexperienced defense with Marcus Holman, Sankey, Bitter. I think Carolina's attack is going to give Princeton everything they can handle down below. Conversely, I think the Princeton Tigers are going to light up that Carolina defense. So this game's going to be high scoring. Face-off battle will be essential. RG Keenan struggled last weekend. Whoever wins face-offs and makes some saves will win this ball game. I'm taking the over out to the desert.
And I don't think that there's any question that that's probably the smart bet. I think that you mentioned, obviously, North Carolina's attack. They haven't gotten necessarily the production from their midfield, at least consistent production from their midfield in their first, you know, four or five games that I think they would like. I sense that there's a breakout coming for that unit, Chad Tutton, and particularly with Stephen Pontrello working into the mix as well.
Game two, Whitman Sampler Independence Classic. You can watch it on ESPN3.com. It's Penn and Villanova. Midweek games can be an issue for some teams. We'll see how Penn reacts to 2-1 week.
And I think that this is a Penn team that we expected to see last year, but they just didn't necessarily have the goal-scoring pop. I thought that, you know, their result in Denver last weekend was impressive, even though they, you know, needed a lot of late goals in order to make it appear a little closer than it probably was. On the flip side, Villanova, you know, it's a team that I think in some ways is rebuilding and trying to figure out a little bit who they are after some guys that had played long minutes over the course of their career graduated over the last two seasons. So, you know, Wildcat team that I you know, I have to say I don't know a ton about. I'll be very interested to see how this matchup plays out.
Our TV games this week, a little double dip of the UMBC Retrievers. Wednesday night, 5 o'clock ESPNU. It's our featured Wednesday night game, weather permitting. This one could be really interesting to watch. 4 to 6 inches of snow, massive winds. This game is in a tenuous position right now. And then Friday night at 5 on ESPNU, UMBC once again taking on Hopkins. Last thing I want to ask you, Terry, if you were in that Hopkins coaching staff meeting, what are some of the changes that you would consider coming off that Princeton loss?
Well, I think that, you know, finding a little bit more consistency down low is going to be important. I think that when you, you know, examine what the close defense wasn't able to do, it might not necessarily to me be a matchup or be a matter of changing personnel and so far as changing the way that you approach your matchups, the type of players that you want to put on different guys. And I thought that at times Chris Leitner looked, you know, a little bit lost, but at times over the course of his career, he's looked like the solidifying factor where Tucker Durkin is at his best going out and trying to take the ball away. So I think that, you know, they need to figure out a way to be consistent in their approach and in their, you know, slide packages and not make the mistakes that allowed some of the goals that Princeton was able to get.
Inside Lacrosse should be your source as you get ready for the upcoming weekend and to track all the Saturday action. Thanks, Terry. Saturday, first game in the Whitman Sampler Independence Classic, St. John's and Syracuse. That's at noon, ESPN3 Live. You can watch it on Comcast Sportsnet. We welcome in Syracuse midfielder Luke Cometti. Luke, I was able to watch your Army game last night. I've seen highlights of the Virginia win as well. What's been the biggest turnaround for this Syracuse team after that opening loss to Albany?
I think the biggest turnaround, you know, we played better both games. I think we played well offensively our first game. You know, our defense, they did what they could. There's, you know, Albany had a very good attack group. And I think the past two games they've really stepped up. And that's made it, you know, our offense hasn't been quite what it was the first game, but we're starting to climb back. Once we put those two things together, that's when it's going to be exciting from there.
Got you running first midfield with JoJo Marasco and Scott Loy. I got to ask you, why number 53?
Well, it's funny. You know, I get asked that a lot. Actually, my dad used to play football here back in the 80s. And when I got the list, when I was transferring here, they got the list of open numbers. I saw it on there, and I thought it was kind of funny because I've never seen 53 on the lacrosse field, so. No, there's nothing, no number that I really was sticking with all throughout high school and college, so I decided to go with that.
Your dad, Charles?
Yep.
Linebacker for the Orange. What's it been like for you, you know, running on the top group alongside JoJo?
Well, you know, JoJo's a real fun guy to play with. He always he's always playing with his head up. You know, he's exciting to watch. He really complements my game. You know, I'm more of an off-ball player. And he likes the ball on a stick, and, you know, he's just always got to set up. He's always looking to shoot and pass. So, you know, it makes it easier for everyone else.
Yeah, I was watching the Army game last night. That's the one thing I noticed about you. You're you do a nice job off ball, moving, timing your cuts, really playing into the, you know, as the defense reacts, you're trying to find the seams and the soft spots. What's that like, knowing that JoJo can put the ball on your stick if you work hard enough to get open?
Well, you know, it makes, you know, it really gives me drive to do what I do. You know, if he's playing with his head down, you know, it's tough to cut. You know, you're moving around. If no one's looking, then it's really pointless. But knowing that he could throw you the ball at any time, you know, it really makes it fun.
This the Syracuse team taking on St. John's in game one at PPL Park. Big East game. When you think about St. John's, it's the team you played last year in the Big East championship game. What stands out about St. John's?
Well, you know, we played them in the championship. You know, they gave us a one-goal game earlier that year. And I know they returned a lot of guys. I know they have a very strong attack unit. And, they're a dangerous team. So they've had some big wins this year. And I think we need to, you know, keep getting better from Virginia and put together a great game. We're playing first time out in the Dome. And I believe the game's outside. So, you know, we're really going to have to stay focused and put together a good game.
PPL Park, gorgeous, gorgeous facility. The field is sensational. You know, great soccer pitch. Take me back to last Friday night's game against Virginia. In the locker room, what was the emotion and the energy of the team after you get that win in overtime?
Well, you know, it was a lot better coming on top of that overtime win as opposed to losing against Albany. It was great. Everyone, you know, was in a great mood. It was great. You know, a bunch of alumni were up there. It was a Friday night game. We had a good crowd. And it was good for our team because, you know, it showed, like, when we win, you know, how much better the morale is and how much better we're going to get from that. So I think there's definitely a positive point in our season, and hopefully just keep climbing from here.
I mean, yeah, you think about how so many teams are involved in close games and just the difference in your how you feel about yourself compare an Albany loss and a Virginia win. It's just unbelievable how one goal can make such a massive difference.
It's so true. You know, you're checking out all the scores. There's been so many close games this year. You know, teams that beat other teams have lost to teams that, you know, it's like a triangle. And it's just, you know, those one goals really do make the difference. And, you know, it really gives you that positive energy that you need, especially later down the season.
Luke, you got any personal goals you set for yourself as a guy running first midfield? Are there any kind of benchmarks that you want to achieve this year?
Well, yeah, you know, it's personally – I just want to, you know, do what we can do to win. You know, I'm hoping, I think I need to start putting the ball in the net a little more. You know, I'm having a lot of open shots, and I know JoJo's always willing to feed, the Tech's willing to feed. And, but I mean, personally, I think, you know, just winning the national championship, getting back to the Final Four is really, it's all our goals and it's all our number ones. So,
like so many former Syracuse greats, you played at West Jenny. What's most important for guys like myself and fans to understand, understand about that West Genesee High School program?
Well, you know, it's there's a lot of us here, and I think Ms. Sarah set some good fundamentals in us, and just on and off, you know, on and off the field, discipline, and just, you know, with our stick. And it's really, you know, it's a different game in college, but if you're able to take what you learn from him and keep adding on to that, you know, that's what makes you, you know, helps you be a good player.
Luke Cometti and the Syracuse Orange taking on St. John's. It's game one from PPL Park on Saturday. You can watch it live on ESPN3. Luke, we appreciate your time this morning. Have a great week of class and practice, and we'll see you Saturday.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on, Quinn.
Thanks, Luke. Saturday at 2:30, ESPN3 live and Comcast Sportsnet. It's Penn at Villanova. It's the middle game of three from PPL Park in the Whitman Sampler Independence Classic. We welcome in Penn Quakers head coach Mike Murphy, off to a pretty solid start this season. Coach, you get that first win against Duke. What did that win do for kind of the psyche, just the energy of your program after last season?
Yeah, it was a great day for us. You know, we played well against a marquee program in Duke, and a team that I think is going to be there in the end. And things, it was the first game of our year, and so the preseason was kind of building toward that. And I think the most important thing is that we played well. We've got a new offensive coordinator in Judd Lattimore and a slightly new style of play. And the fact that we could score 14 goals and play at the pace we played at over the course of 60 minutes was encouraging. It was a great start to the year.
What's new about the style of play offensively?
It's just faster from end to end. You know, we're trying to create a little bit more transition than we had in the past. And then the offense itself, once we get settled into the 6-on-6, is a little bit different too, with a little bit more specificity, a little bit more attention to the technical skills and things like that. And I think it's already shown itself in a couple games. Like to have shot better against St. Joe's in the second game, but I still think we played good, solid offense, and pretty excited about where we're headed at that end of the field.
You played good offense again at Denver in a loss last weekend against a very, very good Pioneer team. What was the most significant takeaway from that trip?
I think that we need to be more consistent on defense, and a lot of that is credit to Denver and their offense and Coach Brown up there. They do a great job. Their offense is great. Their players are great, and we knew we'd have our hands full trying to slow them down. And again, mostly credit to them. But we didn't do a great job. We had a number of fundamental breakdowns. Our goalie didn't have a ton of saves, but we didn't give him too much of a chance on a good number of the shots and things. It was just disappointing. seen from a defensive standpoint. But again, credit to them. And we did play pretty well offensively, especially in the first and fourth quarters. But we kind of stalled, surprisingly, in the second and third quarters. And I'll partly credit to Denver's defense as well. But I feel like when we are clicking, we can get up and down pretty good and hopefully generate some offense while still playing pretty sound defense. So,
who's playing well right now?
Tim Schwelle is playing great on attack. I don't really look at our stats a whole lot, but I'm pretty sure he's our leading scorer, and he's just our leading offensive guy. Kind of runs the offense. He's the quarterback, but also one of our more dangerous Dodgers. A very good shooter. Rides very well. Tim's playing great on attack. So, and Zach Lasko is playing great in the midfield. He's kind of our prototypical middie. Good on defense. Good on offense. Gets up and down the field. Good on ground balls. Scoring a lot of goals for us and things. So, but it's pretty evenly spread. We got a sophomore named Isaac Bach, who's become a pretty strong offensive force, and Drew Belinsky's an anchor in the midfield as well. And then another sophomore named Will Lako, who's done a great job and running on our first midfield line now.
What's the biggest challenge? You play Lehigh on Tuesday. You got to bounce back two games in 1 week. What's the biggest challenge for you as a coach?
I think making sure we're rested but still prepared. I think that's a delicate balance for me. You know, we've been a team that's worked pretty hard, but I also think that we have to have our legs back. And so for us to do our standard preparation process, go through that, and still be fresh and ready to run, you know, against Lehigh is going to be important. So kind of focusing on that. And we need to play well defensively, you know, to play the way we did against Denver and then come and face a Lehigh team with some great attack and a very good offense. It's going to be a good challenge for us, and I'm excited to see how we play.
Tuesday night game at Lehigh, Saturday, 2:30, Penn and Villanova. Nova plays an interesting style of offense. A bunch of guys on the perimeter, a lot of off-ball movement, a lot of weaving. You've played them in the past. What stands out about the way they play offense?
Yeah, it seems to be organized chaos, and it's very hard to cover because they do move around a lot. And so if your tendency is to ball watch and be very choreographed with your slides, then you're gonna have a hard time defending them. And we've had a lot of good games. You know, in the 3 years I've been here, we've had one goal games with Villanova every year. So my guess is it could be another tight one. And you have to be pretty fluid on defense. You have to be ready to slide from different people in different places because their offense is it is moving around a lot. And so if you're not pretty aware and not pretty organized, you could give up a lot of goals.
Sensational weekend last week for the Ivy League as a group. Princeton beats Johns Hopkins. Cornell takes care of Colgate by a wide margin. Brown beats UMass. As you look at the league as a whole, what are some of your expectations?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's wide open. I think in the 3 years that we've had the Ivy League tournament, six of the seven teams have already played in it. So there really is no hierarchy in terms of kind of top to bottom. I think Cornell and Princeton, you know, have kind of been the established teams. And then Yale, you know, had a great year last year and things. But I really think it's completely wide open. Obviously, with Cornell, with Rob Pinnell, you know, is a team you kind of look at as being pretty talented and pretty tough. And obviously Princeton with the start they've had. But, you know, I really think it's going to be wide open. I believe anybody in the league could win the regular season and, you know, and then anybody can win the tournament and stuff. I think there's a lot of talent and depth. I think all seven of these teams are well coached, and I think they all recruit very well. There's a lot of talent. And so it's not surprising that we've got, you know, four or five teams in the top 20 on a regular basis. And I think it should be a very exciting Ivy League season, I guess, starting in a week and a half.
Yeah, that starts on March 16th when you guys face Princeton. This weekend, it's Penn and Villanova, 2:30, ESPN3, Comcast Sportsnet. PPL Park, Coach, what is most exciting for your players about playing in this event this weekend?
I think it's the whole thing. I mean, for us, this is you know, an opportunity to play against a big rival of ours in Villanova, to play at a you know, a unbelievable venue in PPL Park, and to be a part of one of Inside Lacrosse's events, which we were fortunate enough to be a part of last year at the Mile High. You know, I think this is going to be really, really exciting. The weather's supposed to be great. I think we're going to have a big crowd, triple header with, you know, the Big East and Syracuse, St. John's, and Lehigh, Penn State. Philadelphia Lacrosse right now is exploding, and I think this is going to be a marquee event for the area for the spring, and it's exciting for us to be a part of it, and you know, play in front of a crowd, play on TV with ESPN there. It's going to be a really exciting day for us.
Busy week for Mike Murphy and the Penn Quakers. Tuesday against Lehigh, and then Saturday in the Whitman Sampler Independence Classic against Villanova. Coach, appreciate your time. Good luck this week.
Thanks very much, Quint.
ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast continues with ESPN's Mark Dixon. Had the opportunity, Mark, you did, to cover some big-time games earlier this season, both down in Jacksonville and the Loyola Maryland game. I want to focus on three teams, Denver, Ohio State, and Loyola. Ironically, Denver is at Ohio State this week. Having seen the Pioneers in person, it was a losing effort to Penn State, but what stands out about the Pioneers this year's version?
What stands out, I think, is their offensive firepower, and they got a little bit more balance. They're not always looking for Mark Matthews down low. Number 22 would put on that Superman cape, and they would try to have him take games over. It's more balanced, very, very talented athletic midfield with Jeremy Noble and Cam Flint. The injury to Chase Carrero hurts right now, but I like the versatility of Wes Berg. He can transition between midfield and attack. 7 goals as an attackman this past weekend against Penn in a victory. On the defensive side, they're a team that's not as good as I thought they were going to be. They're still giving up a lot of goals. I saw them in person against Penn State, and they just could not defend on ball or off ball. You know that's going to be cleaned up with Bill Tierney and his staff. But and they've got 2 tremendous goaltenders, Ryan LaPlante and Jamie Faust. And if there's anybody that knows how to manage that double goaltending situation, that dual-headed monster, it's Bill Tierney. He did it back in the late 90s with Pat Cairns and Pacho Gudstein on the way to a national title. So it's a team that's loaded offensively, some question marks defensively, but pretty strong in goal. How does it play out with 2 talented netminders splitting time?
Interesting, you look at their schedule. They're at Ohio State this week, and then they have a huge game against Notre Dame at home on the 16th. That's the that game will be played at Mile High Stadium in the Whitman Sampler Mile High Classic. Then they hit the league schedule in the ECAC. They're at Loyola April 13th in a critical ball game. I ranked them at number 5 this week, Mark. I think they're really, really good, especially offensively. I think they're going to give everybody a headache. Where did you rank them?
I had them, I believe I have Denver right around 6. I'm still high on this team. I thought in the preseason, I said this was a team I thought was going to make it to Philadelphia and championship weekend. The defense obviously has struggled a little bit, but I said they're going to get better as the season goes on. One thing you can count on with the Bill Tierney team, Matt Brown is the offensive coordinator, they're going to get better as the season goes on. Fast pace-offs are a concern with Carrero out. Even when he was in, they were struggling a little bit, but I still think they are a top 7 team at this point in the season.
Turn our attention to the Ohio State Buckeyes. Big win last week at Penn State. Buckeyes are now 4-0, playing the ECAC. I really love their coach, Nick Myers. I think he's one of the sharpest X's and O's coaches in the country. You watch them practice. They do all sorts of innovative drills. Went to a zone defense last week in the second half, and it proved to be the difference in that ball game. Greg Dutton got hot. And then they got the lefty Canadian, Logan Shuss, and a bunch of talented Canadians. You saw them in person at Jacksonville. What stood out?
The biggest thing that stood out, Quint, was the energy of Nick Myers and the energy of the team. We saw them practice the Saturday before the game, and they were jacked up. They were excited. They were having fun. Game day, they weren't as sharp as I thought they were going to be. And honestly, I wrote about this in my column this week for Inside Lacrosse. I didn't think they possessed the ability to come back from large deficits. I thought they were limited offensively, didn't have a lot of depth. But I've been proven wrong as they rallied from a 6-goal deficit against Penn State this past weekend for the win. Jesse King is terrific. He's really a one-handed player, but that left hand is outstanding. And one player that I really like for them is Dominique Alexander. He's a guy that carries the mail. He rarely leaves the field for the Buckeyes. He's on the wing on faceoffs. He plays defense. They get him on runs for offense, and he's a capable Dodger. But Nick Myers basically says he's so valuable everywhere else on the field. He's a player that's really benefited from the new rules in one respect. He rarely leaves the field. But on the other hand, he's not as offensive as he has been in the past. So this is a team that is playing with a lot of confidence right now. And I like their defense as well. Joe Meir has moved from the top long stick midfield position. He's now their best close defender. They've got a freshman down there, Robbie Haas, that's played very, very well. And Greg Dutton's healthy. And to your point, playing a zone against a Penn State team proved to be the difference, because Dutton sees the ball, makes good saves, and they're getting good goaltending right now. So this is a team that's riding high. But, man, in that ECAC, anything is possible, and it's such a very talented conference this year.
That's where I want to turn my attention. I rated Ohio State number 11 in my poll right now. Think about this slate coming up, though, Dixie. They got Denver this week. They're at Virginia and then at Notre Dame on the 16th and the 20th. Still down the road, you still got to play Loyola and Fairfield. If they can win one of the next three games, if they can steal one against Denver, Virginia, or Notre Dame, I think it puts them in position maybe to get an at-large, even if they don't win the ECAC.
No question. When you look at Notre Dame, the way they're playing, some people had them ranked number one. Most ranked number two, and I think Notre Dame and Maryland have bubbled up to the top at this point in the season as the number one and two teams in the country. Virginia is a talented team, and that's going to be a tough out for Ohio State, and Denver's conference game. So three huge games, but it goes back to Nick Myers. He wants this program to be big time, to be respected, and to play the best, and they're putting their money where their mouth is, and, man, that's a daunting stretch as any in college lacrosse, that three-game stretch.
Mark Manuel will be calling the Whitman Sampler Independence Classic on Saturday. PPL Park, a tremendous stadium. We got St. John's and Syracuse, Penn Villanova, Penn State Lehigh. I've never done a triple header. Bring the throat lozenges. It's going to be a long day for us. Last thing I want to talk about, though, Loyola. You got to cover their Maryland game, and then I got to see Maryland the next week just destroy Duke. And I think that upgrades everything about Loyola, the fact that they were kind of able to stand toe-to-toe with Maryland. They gave them a nice little comeback in the second half. What are your biggest question marks for this Loyola team?
Well, I think first and foremost, against a Maryland team, and not many teams possess the first line that the Terps do, and Shannon Chuck, Bernhardt, and Haas, and they missed Josh Hawkins big time in that game. They've won with him, won without him in the past, but I think how long is the suspension? When does he come back? How is he going to be when he comes back? He means so much to that team. The second thing about Loyola that really concerned me against Maryland was careless turnovers. Just simple exchange passes, getting the ball from one spot to the other, were mishandled or airmailed, whatever the case may be. You typically don't see that at a Loyola. And their goaltender, Jack Runkle, just didn't get a chance that day to get hot. And so in the second half, where they were savable shots, he didn't have any energy. He had no step. He had no energy in his legs. But I think all those things, that's a one-game thing for this ball club. They're very talented. Mike Sawyer is a tremendous shooter. I think they need some more midfield depth. Chris Lane and Davis Butts are the two that are dangerous. Sean O'Sullivan, I think, needs to pick it up. But two players from Loyola that I'm incredibly impressed with. Joe Fletcher has elevated his game from 2012 to 2013. I think you're talking about a potential first-team All-American right there. And Justin Ward, as a conductor of that offense, has elevated his game to a whole new level. Seven goals, I believe, against UMBC. Still makes some mistakes. He's still young and still learning. He's just gotten the reins of the offense in his hands, really, when last year it was Sawyer, and basically just get the ball to Sawyer on the right side, Lesby on the left, and we're going to be fine. Now he's been asked to dodge a little more. He's been asked to create a little more. I think he's handled it quite well. So Loyola's a team, they're very good. They're very talented. And to lose to Maryland without Josh Hawkins, 12-10, they had a shot late in the game. Amato was able to save it. That could have changed the ball game around a little bit. So I think Loyola's in a real good spot right now.
Last thing I want to ask you, Mark, it has nothing to do with talent on the field or teams. It has to do with the weather. Wednesday night, and I'm not sure when this podcast will ultimately be posted, but Wednesday night it's UMBC at Maryland, and we're staring into a potential snowstorm Tuesday night into all day Wednesday, 4 to 6 inches of snow, 25-mile-an-hour winds. Whose duty is it to call off a game or to say it is safe to play? And what are some of the factors or some of the impact that a referee's decision will have on whether it is okay to play?
You know, I've never been in that situation, but I know folks who have. And you try to make it as much a collaborative effort as possible. The referees have a huge input, player safety, the safety of the officials. And I think from a school administration standpoint, in this case, we're talking about the University of Maryland, they've got to talk with UMBC about player safety, student-athlete safety, but also, by and large, you know, fan safety. Can our fans get to the game? Maybe they make the decision not to have any fans at the game, if the teams just play, if the teams can travel safely. So there's a lot of factors that go into it. No one likes to play in adverse conditions like that that are going to be safety hazards. So safety is going to be paramount on the minds of the officials, the coaches, and the school administration.
It'll be interesting to see the way this plays out over the next 36 hours as we tape this show on Tuesday mornings. UMBC slated to play Maryland 5 o'clock, Byrd Stadium on Wednesday. Massive snowstorm headed our way. Player safety, safe of travels, and obviously if any kind of vision is impaired, I would not be wanting to play goalie in that ball game. Mark, we appreciate your time. I look forward to reading your Tuesday takeaways every week at InsideLacrosse.com.
Thanks, Quint.
If you enjoyed this version of the ESPNU Lacrosse podcast, feel free to post it on Facebook and tweet it out there. We've got a lot of young listeners. Three things I want to pass on today: your work ethic and practice. Keep in mind that everybody's working hard in practice. Every single team in the country, 2.5 hours. It's what you do outside of the confines of practice that'll determine your future as a player. Get to practice early. Get against the wall. Put in an extra 10 or 15 minutes every day working on your stick work, your shooting. Get in the weight room, get stronger, get faster, and watch as much tape of your team and excellent teams, top-quality Division I teams, as you can. Continue to dream big. If you can't dream it, you won't achieve it. And lastly, always be a good teammate. Put your arm around the guys in your team who are struggling. Pick them up, lift their game, and challenge the ones that'll make you a better player.
Thanks for downloading the ESPNU Lacrosse Podcast. For more great shows, be sure to check out the Pod Center page at ESPNRadio.com.